situation was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Giants. I'm Tom Howley, just from Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures. SP Futures down 6.25. Dow Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 6. So down a little bit, but not horrible. We're down a bit yesterday as well, but still nothing compared to the up day of the day before. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. It's last warm day of the year, so I might as well say I'm great today and tomorrow can suck.
What, are you taking over the weather for AV or for Matt?
No, I just happened to watch the weather report this morning. Yeah, I guess I am taking it over. So one less thing to do at the bottom of the hour, Matt. You're home free.
Well, what's annoying to me about the weather of late is that it's beautiful and dry and sunny every single day, except for Mondays when my softball team is supposed to play. It rains every Monday.
What do you think of playing the fall softball in Chicago?
I love it so far. Now, as we get closer to November, I get nervous, especially when we've had a rain out now because of Monday-only rain. But it's great. Great so far.
We played a few
years ago. I did it a couple of times a long time ago, and you get to that last couple of weeks of the season, and when it's cold, man, I was first baseman, so that sort of explains it. You know, when your hands are cold and you got to catch throws barehanded, it really sucks.
Oh yeah, especially early in the game when that ball's really hard.
Yeah. Oh, you know what the worst is before the first inning. You roll the ball around to the infielders, and they all want to uncork one last good throw before the game starts. You go whap, 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 and then you begging for fly balls for the whole first inning.
Kevin, you have been away from the game a while. I think if you were to go back, you would notice there is a subtle change in the ball. The ball's never quite as hard as it was the first inning back in our day, and yet it stays pretty much the way it is the whole game. It's not the hard thing at the beginning and the pillow at the end. The balls are a lot better in that regard.
Well, it was never the pillow at the end on one game. It was definitely softer.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying it hangs together
but to
better.
To say
now.
A pillow at the end would be kind of an exaggeration.
Well,
that's the ball that you have, you know, that you don't even want to use for batting practice anymore is the pillow.
Right. Well, I'm saying it was it's a little different. No, it's even more bizarre is the cover's changed a little bit to where if you whack one of them in the outfield, it wants to check up like as a, and the laces aren't as big, and but it wants to check up. It doesn't want to hit and run like it used to. So it's actually harder to hit a home run.
Hey, you just haven't seen me hit one time. That's all. I hit it. It doesn't check up. So.
I used to see you hit it. And you hit it pretty far. I'm not so sure now if the window across the street might be safe. I'm just saying. Just saying, you know.
I think damn near anything's safe. I still have my bat. Did I ever tell the bat story on the air?
God,
I have weird taste in softball bat. I like to use a legal bat because I didn't want to have to change for tournaments. So it had to be the 34 inches and the umpire's ring. You know, they had this ring that you'd pass over the bat, and as long as the bat fit there, it would through the ring, it would be fine. And so I had this one, but it was really top heavy, and I liked that because I like to use the whole field, and you know I could take a real inside out swing, and just drag the barrel of the bat through, and still with when it was top heavy, I could get a lot of you know I could still hit it hard to right field, and so it was in the team bat bag when the guy who had them had his car had the bag had his car stolen.
Oh no!
So you know now I have this really oddball bat that I can't use, and you know I was trying out a different bat every game for a while, and after a few weeks, my brother Tim was playing with some people at work, and somebody had the exact same model bat. And it was just really, you know, it was old, the paint was coming off and everything, but it was the same bat, and he immediately said to the guy, I will buy you any bat you want, brand new, if I can have that. And so from then on, that bat was never out of my possession, and as I turn around and look in the room right now, there it is, standing in the corner.
So what if your car would have gotten stolen?
If my car would have gotten stolen? Yeah. You know, hard to say.
That's great.
hard to say, but yep. So yeah, that bat goes with me everywhere I want. But my brother Tim, man, he's my hero.
God.
That's awesome.
Well, Matt, the game, the people have, well, the people I played with, the people have changed somewhat dramatically. And that it was a very serious blue collar game. You know, when well, I mean, other people played as well. I mean, everybody played, but the guys you played against, I mean, now. I'm not saying that the people now aren't in shape. I mean, they go to the club, they run, they do all kinds of stuff. But blue collar guys were different. The guys that worked all day long in a factory, you know, had forearms like Popeye. You don't see people like that anymore. Because why would you? Nobody does that kind of work. I mean, not many people do. So the bats these guys would use, half of them you couldn't even pick up. Because they would be a big hardball bat, maybe a 36 incher or 35, and they'd drill the end out and fill it with lead. So the sort of thing was, and you could use any bat you wanted. And it was really, I mean, it wasn't like they could hit it that much further. I mean, I guess if you were big enough to swing it. My cousin came out to play once, and he was one of those guys. And we get him for a couple of games. He's like going through the bats. He goes, don't you guys have a real bat? What do you mean a real bat? He's like, well, one with like lead in it and stuff. I go, we don't have anybody who can swing that. We're all a bunch of college guys, right? Even though we had guys
who were. The Frank Zappa song, Cosmic Debris, you say, is that a real bat or a Sears bat?
Yeah, but it was, you know, these guys, remember the one guys we played, Kevin, the guys from Classic Auto Rebuilders? These guys came out first year.
That rings a bell, yeah. I remember the team name. Tell me about the team.
Well, they were all these guys that were, one was more buff than the next. Their team uniform was like a wife beater shirt. Because they wanted to show off all their muscles. They were all up there, the undershirt shirt. Not even, you know, the sleeveless. We're talking about, you know, damn near the halter top of shirts, because these guys wanted to, and every one of them was bigger than the next. So you're sitting there, it was one of the first, we just started, and so I'm pitching, right? I don't know what happened to our pitcher, but. So I give up like four home runs in a row. This was first, so this guy goes, one of my buddies goes, come on, get out of here, you can't be doing any worse. He walks three guys, and the next guy loses one. So I go, that's better. At least we had a chance.
Yeah, way better.
Yeah, that's way better.
Yeah, we
better.
Had those guys. We had. I remember the Palmer Club too.
Yeah, yeah, they were
those guys could really beat the ball, but they were always out so late. We were playing in a doubleheader league at Mount Greenwood Park, and if you caught the Palmer Club in the noon game, we beat them every time.
Yeah,
but by the 2 o'clock game. they were awake. They were awake. For listeners who don't know how Chicago parks go, sometimes there's a little bit of overlap in the diamonds, so your ball may roll. If you really hit one, it may roll into one of the other games, and they'll have to stop while you retrieve it and throw it back. But we had our guy Ed Condon in right field, and this guy, this lefty on the Palmer Club, just launched one, and it went so damn far. This was a field that didn't overlap. It wasn't close to overlapping, and the ball rolls in. They call timeout. Eddie's kind of hoofing it back there to get the ball so we can keep playing. He's not going to throw anybody out. Guy picks it up to toss it to him, and he looks at him and he goes, where are you playing? You know, where'd that come from?
Well, you know those fields down in Grant Park, down in the hole. If you ever see about last night, those movies?
Yeah.
Well, those were all pretty close, and we had this guy on our team, Russell Gaines, and he ended up. Russell was one of the best players. I mean, he was this 6'3". He looked like Roberto Clemente kind of a guy, and he could play everything. I don't know why he was playing with us and he wasn't a pro. I mean, he was that good. And sometimes the interesting part about some of the black dudes when they played, and this is not anything racial or anything, it has to do with a lot of those guys. If a lot of times white guys like me, you learn playing hardball. So when a ball came in, you were always trying to hit line drives. I mean, even if it was a home run, you wanted to hit a, you know, you weren't a launch angle kind of guy. Plus, I didn't have that kind of power, but you were line drive hitters. You were supposed to hit the middle of the ball, hit it hard, and you wanted to shoot the gap. Well, some of the black guys never had a chance to play Little League, you know, so they never learned that way. So they just learned playing softball. So if the ball came in high, they just took it high. They just swung up there. I would never even attempt to do that to a pitch because I was never trained that way. But these guys ended up for softball. They actually were better hitters. And so Russell had this amazing power. This guy launches one high and the pitcher pitches one high in Grant Park. And the other field was pretty crowded. So your left fielder and our right fielder were kind of best buddies anyway. But Russell nails this ball. We had a little bit of a breeze, but not much. He airmailed the other field. he totally airmailed the other field. It like landed in their bench. These guys are like, what the bleep? What? Where did that one come from? I mean, he totally airmailed the field.
Like, that's crazy.
It was just, I mean, I'm like, the guy goes, toss it back to me. He goes, I guess that's a home run. that was a home run.
I spoke.
one more quick story. There was a guy from First Stop, and he was a great outfielder. And he was on the Palmer Club, and they were playing People's Choice used to recruit all these people on Sunday that were like really good players. So the one guy they got was, remember Benny Holt?
Yeah. Sure.
This was a guy back in the day. He was a truck driver, and he was one of these guys that could bench like 450 or something, which when nobody could do that. So, but he only played catcher, and he wouldn't cover the plate because he didn't want to take a chance on somebody. And here's like the biggest guy in the field that wouldn't catch the ball, right? But it doesn't matter. If he was on your team, he was a monster. So the wind's blowing out a little bit, and he was the only guy that this other team would play four outfielders for. So this guy's out in the left center, and he puts one up into the wind, and the thing just goes. This left center fielder, probably the fastest guy in the league, he turns around, and he races. And he does one of these Willie Mays catches, like way, way the hell out in the middle of where the football field normally would be. There's a guy in first base, he tags up. They throw the ball in. Two guys make two really good relays. And by the time the ball got in, the guy had scored from first and was sitting on the bench. The ball had to be 340 feet away. I mean, it was once it got up and Benny got his long out, and he was happy because the guy scored. Like, God, where do you get these?
Yeah, RBI, sack fly RBI with a man on first. Yeah.
I mean, when's the last time you saw a man on first score on a sacrifice fly with no screw up in the middle? Pretty amazing. Anyway,
Joe writes in, Maddie, be careful when scoring a run when home plate is frozen. I screwed up my knee because I didn't expect it.
God,
that could be coming. Early November in Chicago can be a crapshoot.
Well, we won this league out in.
I remember when they used to on the north side. Anyway, they used to put these wooden home plates in. They were anchored in, and one time I tore ligaments in my ankle. Really badly sliding into home because I caught the corner of it. They come out with the rubber home plate and just set it on top. I tore up my ankle pretty badly. I needed a courtesy runner for like a month.
Oh man!
Well, they used to have the part where you had the little grave next to the plate where everybody dig it out and they would never fill it back in.
Yep.
So you couldn't really slide anyway.
Chicago parks are a trip.
Oh yeah, they were a trip. I remember when I was on this all-star little league team. We decided to practice every day, right? Because we were going to go try and go to Williamsburg. We didn't make it out of the neighborhood, let alone out of the state. So the first thing we did was go out to Evergreen Park. The manager says, "Okay, everybody down on their hands and knees." He produces like 8 buckets, and everybody crawl on their hands and knees across the diamond and pick up all the stones and drop them in the buckets, right? So we get to the other side of the diamond, and the buckets are like half full. And he goes, "All right, get back down your hands and knees and go back the other way." It's like it was like the diamond reproduced. We picked up almost as many the second time through as we did the first time through. It's like the thing was having stone babies going. Anyway, that's what people used to put up with. I mean, I don't want you to swear.
How many chicken bones did you find?
Oh, well, you never know. Anyway, all right, Kevin, we got to talk about the world a little bit here. We've got the Apple Day yesterday was kind of a bust, even though the stock had been up so much. Down like 350 on the, or what people were expecting. We had the huge Amazon day. I suppose we'll get all the stats on that as today goes on. But by and large, I mean, you wonder, you know, again, I say every day and I didn't want to, but you know what? It is, if you have a broken leg and it's sticking out of the skin, it's the topic you're going to talk about because it's the one that's affecting you the most. And I look at what the Fed is doing, I look at what's going on with the market, and people continue to try and talk people into these stocks being the proper price, you know, when the money's just coming in. And what happens if the Fed ever decides to drain like $3 trillion out of an economy? I mean, I can't even imagine what kind of a bleep storm that would be.
Well, theoretically, in a right world, wouldn't they have to do that sooner or later anyway?
Well, right, but I'm saying whatever happens on the way in happens on the way out, right? I mean,
this is sort of the what goes up must come down theory of economics.
Yeah. Well, look it's what happened in the second quarter of 2018, or last quarter, sorry. And as Powell came in and he wanted to quote normalize things, and he raised rates a few times. It's not just raising the rates; it's what you do with the money. The money coming in or going out. I mean, and it's, you know, right now it's, you know, and it's interesting that some of the stuff, you see these bank stocks heading south, even though they seem to have more money than they ever could want. Of course, I think there's I think Kevin, that's a lot of what, our friend Eric talks about, who hasn't been on for a while because of the COVID, but talks about with the management class. It's really hard to figure out how banks are actually doing by how much they pump through to income and how much they pump through to their shareholders, because the management class of these guys, they've become utilities. They become Commonwealth Edison, where if you look at the amount of money the top 100 people are making, it's like they became the owners, right? It seems like.
Yeah, there was a time that you went into banking for the stability and security, not for the money. You know, the industry was considered not the highest paying industry, but you knew that you could have long term employment there.
Well, I'm going to go.
Neither is true now.
I mean, I'll go a step further. When it was, I'm going to say competitive. I would say, Kevin, right now that there's and this is right up your wheelhouse. That if you were to take your and Michigan doesn't have quite as many branch banks, but you guys have quite a few, not branch banks, independent banks. Because Illinois was, for those who don't remember.
Michigan has quite a few. Indiana has a lot.
Well, Illinois, the Midwest has a lot. But I mean, Illinois was, I believe, was the last state in the nation to allow branch banking, correct?
Yeah, it was, yep.
But, I mean, Indiana and Michigan had to be not that far behind or bear ahead of it. Because there's almost as many banks there, it seems to me, when I drive around. Of course, now you can't drive around without...
You know what? You know what's popular in this area is credit unions.
Okay, and those guys have come
there
up
are,
to the...
There are some credit unions, some of them very large, and some of them just, you know, one standalone office. But the credit unions are thriving in this area.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Credit Union One used to sponsor part of the show. Those guys... I mean, they're huge, but Nuveen and those guys. I mean, they are your credit card from there. Your rate's a lot cheaper than anybody else. What do you? All you have to do to join is $5, right?
Well, you have to. You generally have to meet some criteria too, and it's not hard to meet them. Yeah, for instance, they're. I don't know if it's. I think it might be teachers here. Federal Credit Union, but one of the credit unions, you just have to live or work in St. Joseph County or Elkhart County.
But I think if you don't, so, I think it's $5, because Credit Union 1 is $5.
I don't remember that being true, but I'll take your word for it. I don't remember that being true here.
You're right. Every one of them...
But then you have some other credit unions where, you know, if you're in the footprint, you're just in.
It's yeah, but I think the barrier, I mean, I know if you look at a list of Illinois credit unions, every one of them has, like you say, some sort of a line of demarcation, a line of something. I mean, my stepfather used to be the, he and another guy ran the St. John Fisher Credit Union. And if you go down the list, you'll still find the St. John Fisher Credit Union on there. Or the St. Nornet's Credit Union. There are all those in there. But I think, Kevin, if you're no longer in the parish, you can still be in it. And I think there's other ways to join, but, I mean, anybody can join Nuveen. There is a process. You have to fill something out and you have to say you're somewhere. But like you say, it could be a whole county. Isn't there a Lake County Credit Union or something?
There may be. And, yeah. And then there are some that are, you know, that are limited to certain, you know, companies. You have to work at a certain company and things like that. So they're all over the map on that, but no matter. If you want to belong to a credit union, you can belong to a credit union.
Well, but my point I'm trying to make here, and I haven't come close to it yet, is if you were to look at the disparity, I mean, when we were young, I can name, you know, seven or eight banks right near our house or savings and loans where everybody got their mortgages, and there wasn't a soul there, I don't think, that was overpaid because it was very competitive. It was like you don't have to worry how much Nick makes at the Tripoli Tap, because if Nick decides to pay himself $500,000, I think the Tripoli Tap goes under it. What do you think, Manny? I don't think there's a chance.
Yeah, they go under anyway, because if they lose Nick, you know, he's just too darn important to it.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that in those days, the people with the mortgages paid six, the people with the passbooks, because there were no checking accounts in savings and loans in those days, the people with the passbooks got three. And the spread of three paid people's salaries, paid for the building, paid for Little League uniforms, correct? I mean, that's what everybody did. And there was a logic to it. And that's why whenever that's how I grew up, and that's my logic, is everybody can't figure it out by now, is always set up with, are things sustainable? Is there a method to the madness of what we're doing? But anyway, Kevin, I would say that if you were to look at the salaries of the people in all the credit unions you're talking about and all these smaller banks, these regional and local banks, and I'm going to say that they will be very competitive, and if you and I looked at them, we'd say, man, that's about right, or man, I thought that guy was making more than that. Yet, if you walk into Citigroup or J.P. Morgan, I think it's a whole different story.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
And, there's a... I mean, I don't know what you do about that, but competition, I mean, I that's why when people talk about, you know, socialism versus capitalism and the left and the right and this and that, and these guys are socialists and these are other things. I always look at it, you're either competitive or you're not. And if you're competitive, it solves an awful lot of, you know, to me, it solves an awful lot of sins. There's an awful lot of things that your regulators, if you even need them, you know. I mean, in an open outcry trading crowd, I don't even think you didn't need anybody watching. You know, now, of course, there's people watching every pit. What are you watching for? It's an open outcry pit. Everybody can hear every trade. And if somebody goes, I'm at a half and you trade 5/8, the whole world hears it and bitches about it, right? I mean, pretty much. When you design things, when things are competitive, you don't have to watch them. The more things become less and less competitive, that's when you need, and where are the regulators? We need more regulators. We need more regulation. You only need that if, you know, and, you know, start with railroads. You know, you give somebody the history of this is, you know, there's nothing you can, your life is not changing if you know the history of railroads. But when you know the history of it, it was really the first huge industry in this country. Well, I mean, there were fur traders and there were people like that that made a lot of money and those kinds of things. But by and large, railroads were given franchises. They were given monopolies by the government. I mean, I guess if you gave the New York Central the route into Chicago and then you gave the Pennsylvania Railroad the route into Chicago, you became somewhat competitive. But by and large, in any other area, if you gave somebody the route, one of the first routes in this area was Chicago to Galena. Like, you wouldn't have figured that out except there was silver mines in Galena. So one of the first railroads built in the Midwest was from Chicago to Galena. So if you drive out to Galena and you see some railroad, you look at that and go, wow, that's one of the first ones built in the area because there were silver mines in Galena. And so you would never even know that unless you read something. But the point being is now, you give these guys all this land to sell to people to build a railroad. So you've essentially given a monopoly. So all of a sudden, Kevin and Maddie get a soybean farm along the way, and they go, great, there's a railroad. I can send my soybeans to Chicago. How much you guys want to send them? How much you got? There's no roads. There's no nothing. And all of a sudden, everybody complains enough, and the government says, wait a minute. We gave you idiots a monopoly. You can't charge people this much. We're going to have a, what do they call them, an interstate commerce commission to regulate the rates. So one thing leads to another on the regulation part, whenever there's not competition.
Well, and the thing that happens, Tom, is as you consolidate the industries and decide that, or allow the industries to consolidate, and you decide that you need more regulation, with that kind of power in the industries, they tend to control the regulators because they can wield the power on them.
Right.
So, you can't win that game.
Well, plus you have the period of time between when people recognize it, okay, and when you actually get the legislation through, you can make a fortune in those years. That's even assuming, like you say, that the regulators are doing what they're supposed to be doing, which again is another problem. I think what you're talking about is after a period of like 60 years, clearly the Commonwealth Edison people are much better known in the ICC office in Illinois than you and I, the citizens against Commonwealth Edison. Right, I mean, those guys are in there all the time.
And people move back and forth between the regulatory state and the corporate state.
Well, they get to deduct the cost of the lobbyists and those people from their expenses. Where if you and I want to fight them, we got to pay for it. Which is a big difference. SP Futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ now up 30. Can't keep a good NASDAQ down. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control
here, right now.
right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stacking Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Miller, over on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with it as well. That's the Cougars now only down 2. NASDAQ up 25. Like I say, you can't keep a good... Gotta buy some Amazon. Money's gotta go in the same place every day. We've got Apple up 40 cents. We've got Microsoft up another $1.14. The amazing quiet monopolist, Microsoft. They manage to... They talk about everybody else being monopolies, and they manage to sneak right under the radar and goes up every day. Remember, that stock was $35 for years. Couldn't get out of its own way, and now it goes up every single day. Anyway, Dow futures up 8 over in Europe. We've got DAX down 19.1%, FTSE down 10.1%, CAC around down 9.2%. So down, but very lightly down over there. Nikkei up 24, it's 0.1%. Shanghai down 18.6%. Hang Seng up 17. Let's call that one flat. It's like 0.1%. Yesterday is a way of review. Dow was down 157. That's 0.5%. S&P down 22. This is a four-day winning streak was broken yesterday, but not by much. When I say not by much, 22 points used to be a lot in the S&P. It's not anymore. NASDAQ was only down 12. NASDAQ's already up more than it was down yesterday. Bonds, 0.71. So they're the other way. They were 0.75. The 10-year yield, if you're... In terms of recession, the bonds are not telling you we're coming out of recession. The U.S. stock market seems to be, maybe is. One minus 0.58, and Japan positive 0.03. So virtually no change there in a long time. Oil down 9 cents, 40.11. Brent down 5 cents, 42.40. Natural gas down 18 cents, 2.66. RBOB down a penny to 1.17. And we've got gold going up here today, 19.05 up 11.10. Silver up 21 cents, 24.35. Copper up a penny, $3.05. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're very quiet so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. In fact, there are no accidents or stalls or delays to speak of. So enjoy a nice, quiet Wednesday morning commute if you're heading into downtown today. Weather today, according to Kevin and according to the weather reports that you read anywhere, this might be our last warm, pleasant day of the season. Partly cloudy skies today, a high of 75, absolutely beautiful. Right now it's mostly clear and 51 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 75, and then we'll be in the 50s for our highs for the foreseeable future after today. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 101, right now it's clear and 66. In sports, it was a rare Tuesday night football game last night, a COVID makeup, if you will, and it was a battle of undefeated teams, 3-0 Tennessee versus 4-0 Buffalo, and the Titans, who hadn't played in 16 days, who hadn't had access to their facility, who had barely practiced, looked like the more organized and better team. They came out and absolutely destroyed Buffalo, 42-16. Chief.
Two questions, and I want to go through some of the prices. And question number one, how do you decide which network gets that game?
They had the game originally.
Oh.
It was a regular game.
Okay, so it was a CBS game.
Correct.
Last Sunday or the Sunday before. And,
yep.
And okay, fair enough. All right. Next question. I'm looking here at prices of individual. That's why, as much as I totally rag at the CPI stuff, I wouldn't want to be there. Maddie, do you see what you and your cutthroat guys have done to the chicken market by going and having chicken wings all over the place?
What's that?
You see what? And now, if I were to ask you guys, it's like Ask an Expert. We used to go on Channel 26. Here at one of the markets, I'll say the Peoria market, which I go once in a while. Guess how much 40 pounds case is of chicken wings, small chicken wings, which is what you get in most places.
You talked about this last week. I don't remember the number, but you talked about this last week. The wings were much more expensive than anything else.
$89.
Yeah.
Guess how much 40 pounds of chicken leg quarters are, which by most people's standards, they have a lot more meat on them and stuff.
Wasn't it like half?
$13.99.
Oh, it's less than half.
Yeah. Right? It's like a fifth, sixth. And boneless, skinless chicken breast, $1.29 a pound. So chicken wings are double the price of a boneless chicken, skinless breast.
So we should open up a restaurant and call it breasts, etc.
Something. Remember when
and we could really run with the theme.
Well, remember when our dear departed buddy Bob Golden had to wake, right? And we went to that place by Daryl's, The Log Cabin, really good place, has great food. What the hell's the name of that place? They have live entertainment there once in a while. Anyway, on Sunday night, they have a three-piece chicken dinner. And with, you know, good potatoes and corn, and it's like $7. And it's unbelievable to die for. Well, I'm sitting there, these guys must be going to steal the breast from you, right? No, they stole the wing from you. the wings were, they got more for the wings selling people wings. So they would get the whole chickens,
funny,
pluck the wing off, and then buy, because buying just the chicken wings is too expensive. So it's unbelievable. Anyway, so if we were...
Hey, before you get too far away from it, you mentioned Amazon. There are two things that are different about Amazon Prime Days this year. Do you know what they are?
I bought one item at Amazon. It was lousy, and they wouldn't take it back, so I've never bought anything there again. It was 10 years ago.
So you hold quite the grudge. And,
I am a half Irish. What can I say?
I did know that about you. Yeah. Well, first of all, it's 2 days instead of one now, so it's Prime Days, plural.
Okay.
And second is that Walmart and Target are doing the same thing.
Imagine that.
So, well, you know, they're matching them. And, you know, haven't I been telling you all along here that Walmart especially, but Walmart and Target are making a run at them. They're trying to go and carve into their market share.
Yeah, but they need to sell people something for $50 where they get the Three Stooges for free, and people will lock into it because they spent the $50. They'll follow them around like following the dog in front of you, in a sled race or something.
Well, I don't know what Target has, but I do know that there is a membership. I forget what Walmart calls it, but it's like, you know, it's the Walmart Prime membership, and it does come with a lot. It's pretty much a match for what they Amazon has to offer.
So
it's actually a little less expensive, though.
So I should be ecstatic that instead of a monopoly, we're going to have a oligopoly.
Well, it's a step in the right direction.
Interesting.
And Walmart is embracing its marketplace, whether that's permanent or not. But as we've discussed before, Amazon has been killing off its marketplace sellers on a pretty regular basis. So, so the idea that the small guy has a place to go, I think, is a good thing.
Is there no? Anyway, I want to make this statement. How come you guys, my bosom buddies, how come neither one of you was smart enough to say 6 months ago, why don't we get in the tent business? Every restaurant here that possibly can is paying whatever they can to get a tent.
A tent and a one of those and some outdoor heaters.
Yeah. So
now, and you're asking why Maddie or I aren't smart enough?
Yeah.
Do you know us?
Well, Home Depot is now limiting
we're not smart.
if you ever get the truck magazine, everybody listens for years knows that I love looking at trucks. So always in the back of the magazine, there's a thing called the marketplace, where they got a million different puppies and all kinds of crap back there. But one of the things that I never could figure out what they use them for are these outdoor heaters. You know, there's like a shed. It looks like almost a shed that's a heater. And I'm sitting there, where do these come from? So I go over to Mart Anthony's, one of my favorite places, and those guys, one of these days they come out here, they're terrific. Well, they somehow lucked out and bought the yard, the lot next door. Just out of the, because it wasn't being kept up and they didn't want it next to their place, long before COVID, right? So COVID shows up and they're like, hey, we got this lot, we can't fill up the inside, what do you say we make a really nice outdoor there? And they did. I mean, it's gorgeous. They put artificial surface, all kinds of roses. Did a real nice job on it. Well, of course, they put this big tent up, right? And they're going to put this heater outside the tent. And I'm telling Johnny, I go, wait a minute. You better take some muscle with you, because I know the place. You go to Southern Indiana, and you could have a talk with a guy with no teeth and buy one of these outdoor things. They got these big cables that run into wherever you're heating. But the thing is totally outside the building. And said, you can just get one of those things. He goes, I'm not going to Southern Indiana and buy Southern. I said, well, I'm just saying, you know, somebody's going to get out there and buy one. But it's, I mean, talk about, you know, an industry. There's always an industry that does well, like, no matter what happens. But when you mention the Walmart and the Target and stuff, I mean, are we really going to? I mean, I watch what these companies do. And some of the stuff, I mean, I know I should never have taken the class with the late Father Fitzgerald, where all he did was talk about monopolies and things like that, and how he couldn't stand them. Talked about Brown Camera Company was stolen by Kodak, and he, you know, anyway, he was, shall we say, he was on a 1 to 10, he was a 10 that these, you know, that the laws, the guys just ran roughshod on these laws all through the years. Anyway, but the idea that Apple or Amazon could reach a point, or I see it, I mean, I don't expect other people, because they unfortunately didn't have the same, or fortunately didn't have the same class. I go into Myers like every week, and you know, because Audrey always needs something. Besides, everybody's asleep and I'm up, so they're open 24 hours, so I'm always there at 6:30, meet the same people. And you go down every aisle, Kevin, and it's, now Myers, to their credit, has really, really good, what do you call it, private brands. They're like Kirkland. I mean, if you buy a Myers stuff, it's
sure,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, Walmart, I think the Walmart stuff is awful. I mean, God, you buy the Walmart pork sausage, you cook it at work.
Sam's Choice and that kind of stuff.
The Sam's stuff is seemingly better. I don't know why that is, but the Walmart, if you get their private brand of pork sausage, you better start with 2 pounds because you got like a frying pan full of anyway, this is not a pork sausage show, but what I'm saying is, but now every week you see, like even in the pasta aisle, all of a sudden you'll have a sale on, you know, Del Verde's, which is probably the best pasta you can buy. Well, all of a sudden, and then there'll be a sale, and the next week there'll be like maybe just two kinds of it. Every week there's a regular brand being crowded out. And you see the same thing in Walmart. You go in there, there's nowhere near as much diversity in a Walmart as there is in a, you know, if you go to a local IGA, if you can find one, right? Because all they want to do is get their own brands in there, which is absolutely against the Clayton Act. And what you see with Amazon, when you're saying they're crowding out these people, whenever they get somebody of their own, they crowd out the other guy. I mean, I absolutely was stunned that Apple has the balls, basically, to come out on national TV and say they're dumping everybody who's been in their Apple store regarding, I don't know, was it microphones, earphones? It was earphones, Manny, right? Everybody's in their Apple store.
And some video games.
It was more nuts and bolts. It had to do with earphones. They were booting those guys out because now they had Apple earphones. Well, if you're in an antitrust department and you listen to that, you should immediately call your senior and say, are we going after these guys? And the answer should be hell yes. I mean, you can't do that. Yet, these guys, and you know what? If you ask, and I'm not, you know, taking a shot at somebody younger, Maddie, if I stopped with you by your table at Tripoli last night and Monday and said, is this wrong? Guys would say, no, that's just good business. What's the matter with you? I mean, it is absolutely, totally out of the mindset of people that kind of stuff is wrong. That leading pricing, leading, you know, loss leaders, all those kinds of things are totally against any kind of competition that we should be pushing for in this country. And nobody cares. If they can save 40 cents for a day, they're happy. Or where am I wrong, Kevin?
Well, I don't think you are. And those kinds of practices are patently illegal. And the fact that we have, government that doesn't do it. I'm glad government in recent years has gotten rid of regulations and all kinds of things like that. But there's some things you have to enforce, and we suck at enforcement. It's disappointing because, the whole idea is more competition is better, and government is all about less competition. I don't want to launch into healthcare because we don't have that much time, but it's a big subject this week in the Barrett hearings. They keep talking about it, and you know, the more you have government involved in healthcare, the less you're going to have competition, the more expensive it's going to be. It's the same model that you're discussing here,
right?
And we should be moving opposite directions, but that's not the way people see it, who are part of the government system. It's just they don't see it that way.
Well, they really do believe, I mean, whether it's Jay, whether it's Lori, whether it's Trump or whoever else is going to get in there, they honestly believe Bush felt the same way. Reagan, absolutely. I don't believe in antitrust. To my dying day, I wonder what exactly the antitrust department did for 8 years under Dutch when they didn't prosecute a case. Yet, I don't think he fired anybody. I mean, what would I do coming to work at PTI for 8 years and never doing a trade? What do I do all day? That was before the internet. You couldn't even go to porn sites on the internet, for God's sake, or do emails all day.
Yeah, but at least there was computer solitaire.
In Dutch's day? Hell no.
No, probably not. Well, close call.
Well, I know at Pullman, all we had on our desk was a phone and 14-column accounting paper.
And then you could call a sports phone.
Well, yeah, you could call sport, if there was a sports phone. But I mean, what do they do all day in these areas where they just decide not to? But I mean, at some point, it's so out of the practice that people don't even know. I mean, I was going off on a rant yesterday that with Carl. I said, you know, and I actually was roasting you a little bit, Kevin, a very little bit. But I was saying,
I heard it.
Yeah, and it, well,
I heard it.
As people,
I'll fix you.
But as people want education to be more, I'll use the term vocational. I don't think you can lose the part that when your Federal Reserve guy says something incredibly stupid on TV, because he thinks everybody in the country is ignorant of sin. I would like half the people in the country to have taken a couple of economics courses and shut up and go, why, that's stupid. Why did he just say that? I mean, you know, you're never going to convince me that education for education's sake is. I mean, there hasn't been a class I ever took. Maybe philosophy at Notre Dame. And there hasn't been a class I ever took, Kevin. It's somewhere along the line. Something in that class didn't help me somewhere. At least in understanding what somebody was saying or whatever. I'm just saying.
Hey, you know what? I'm not arguing with you. In fact, you may recall that I sent you the curriculum that I've developed. That is the whole first half of it. It's the same length as our current, supply chain management certificate, but the entire first half of it is foundations, and it is things like economics and leadership. I mean, just basic employability skills, if nothing else. And I just spent, you know, half a class yesterday in informatics saying, guys, you're going to be IT professionals. You have to know more than IT skills. And we spent a long time on what that means. So, you know, I'm on board with that. I think it's really important, and I think it is something that you can weave into other things that you do.
Well, if you were to look at it, I always keep talking about, you know, Spock and Kirk. Spock's dead. Kirk's still around. Playing the three-dimensional chess.
You know they're imaginary characters, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Leonard Nimoy, I like them. Leonard Nimoy's dead. Shatner, he got a little weird as he got older. But, he's a big horse guy. Audrey knows him. He just got a horse things. He's a big Arabian guy or something, or saddlebred guy, whatever the hell a saddlebred is. Anyway, she used to have a long conversation with him about horses. Ugh. But, all I know about horses is you can bet on them, but I don't know. Is that good, Matty, or not? I don't want to ride, but I just want to bet on them.
I tend to agree.
what do you mean? You're from Iowa. You're supposed to be like a ranch guy.
I've ridden a horse once, and it was in Wyoming, and just like on a trail, and it was fun, but I was scared the whole time.
Were you happy to get off?
I was very happy.
Yeah, me too. The horse seemed like he was in charge, not me. The guy even turned around and looked at me like, "Who's this idiot?"
You guys are sissies. Last time I rode a horse. Now it's been a while, but you know, it was riding through the Garden of the Gods in Colorado. What's the city where the Air Force Academy is?
Oh, Colorado Springs.
Colorado Springs.
Yeah. So it's near Colorado Springs. It's beautiful, and if you can go horseback riding, it's the trails are challenging because you're going up and down a lot, and it's real rocky. But damn, it's beautiful back there, and horseback is the way to go.
No, I'd rather walk.
Don't be a sissy about it.
I'll walk. I'd much rather walk. You couldn't get me on one of those mules going down in the canyon where the guys like to be on the outside edge of the trail. You couldn't get me to do that. I walk. Anyway, my point is, do me a favor, just the listeners. When you see these political ads, and they're on all the time, obviously, instead of recognizing which side you are or the other and immediately disagreeing with it or agreeing with it, which I'm not accusing my listeners of being like that, but a lot of people are, just observe the ad and just think for a second, who designed this ad? What are they trying to say? What's the statement? How small of a piece of information are they giving people? And what do you think the estimation of the IQ of the average listener is in the mind of the guy who designed the ad. If you just sit there this weekend or tonight or whenever, well, tonight you got to watch baseball, but if you just listen to that and look at it and go, God, wait a minute, that just told 2% of the story, if that. It clearly is coming out of some field that I don't even know, where left field, right field. Without even knowing what the content is, just say, okay, who do they think, how stupid or uneducated is the person who they think is going to believe that ad? And it is, since I've been doing that once in a while, I'm stunned, Kevin, by how dumb they think people must be. I mean, anybody in Illinois who thinks for a second, and I'm not saying a graduated tax versus not, I'm not making an opinion. Anybody here who is dumb enough to believe that 90%, 7% of the people are going to see their taxes go down, I don't even want you as a client, for God's sake. I don't know what I can do with you.
I mean, yeah, if you were a grifter, you'd want him as a client.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a cash and carry saloon out the front door, yeah, I guess I'd want you. I'd sell you a half pint or something. But what possible? I mean, you may think it's a good idea, you may think it's a bad idea, but anybody who thinks for a second that 97% of people are going to have their taxes go down, I got a bridge for you somewhere. I mean, Matty, am I right or wrong? You always try to critique me. I mean, anybody who believes that has got to be a moron.
I missed the first part.
I'm saying anybody who thinks that if the graduated tax goes through, that 97% of people are going to see their taxes go down. Can anybody possibly believe that?
Is that what they're proposing?
Yeah.
I thought it was 97% were unaffected and then
or go down. Unaffected or go down.
Yeah, and then 3% will go up to pay for whatever. And yeah, I was actually talking about that with Jill last night, and you know, I see both sides of it, and I think I'm going to leave that particular option blank on my ballot because I don't trust either side of it, to be honest.
Well, you got to vote no because they're going to. I mean, they're leaving out the part. They're giving themselves the option of tax and retirement stuff, like Social Security and stuff. And now those, you know, it's not going to be down. So if anything, it can only go up, right? Because now I don't think they can. So, I mean, it's just, plus, if you look at the number, you know, these people should pay more. Okay, so if you were to take the top 3% of the people in the state, and I'm just doing the math off my head now. If anybody can do it better, wants to write in, please do. I'm going to say if you were to take the top 3% of the people who already are paying 30-something on the federal side and probably have a nice house paying there, if you were to raise them from 5% to, say, 20%, which would be outrageous. I don't think it would go that high. If you look at the amount of money that you get by doing that, I'm going to say it's a pimple on the ass of an elephant compared to the state coffers, Kevin. I don't think there's that many rich people where 10% of their earnings is going to make that much of a difference.
Now, it's just back of the napkin math for anybody who cares to do it. It's not anything. It's not even challenging math.
I mean, would I have a problem with if somebody making over 250, 300, if they're graduated with the state was, you know, 6% instead of 4 or something? No, I wouldn't. But would I trust these guys to keep it that civil? No. Why would I trust them? I've never been able to trust them to do anything. And this whole idea...
They haven't earned your trust, Tom?
Well, plus, I mean, the whole concept... I mean, I understand that if some of the with the median family making $57,000 a year, 58. That somebody who makes, a family makes 200 appears rich, okay? But you're not really. I mean, if I'm not defending people, but if you're making that money and you're going to have a nice house, which you're going to pay through the nose for it in terms of taxes and everything else, you're probably going to have a nicer car, but you paid taxes on that. I mean, and so now you're going to pay what? If you got a nicer house, you're going to be, what, 25 grand, 15 grand? You're paying for your taxes on the house. I mean, it's not like if you've got a kid in private school because you happen to be in a place where you're paying that tax, and by the way, the schools are crummy, so you got the kid in private school. I mean, where exactly is this mound of cash that a family with a big house making 200 grand a year has? I mean, I don't think they do have it. Do you, Kevin? I mean, it's not like...
Well, and the question gets to be, when you start asking the question, how much is too much?
Yeah.
Because I think that's relevant, too, on a percentage basis. You know, whether you're wealthy or not, is it reasonable for the government all in, when you start counting up all the taxes, is it reasonable for the government to take 40% of your income, 50% of your income, 60% of your income? What's that number? And, you know, I think that's relevant as well, because we like to think, yeah, that's, you know, $200,000 a lot of money. But when you start saying, should the government be able to take more out of your pay than you do? Then I think almost anybody, no matter what your income level is going to look at that and say, no, that's not, you know, that doesn't seem right.
I think we should zero in on about a third, and that should be it. And we should be able to live like that. We should be able to give a third of our cash to the government, and they should be able to do the things government's supposed to do for that. I honestly believe that, Kevin. And I think in some states, I think in California, I went through it once, and if a guy like, I'm not a big fan of the dude, but Phil Mickelson, if he wins a tournament in California, I think he lives in California. If he wins a tournament in California,
thought he lived in Arizona. Well, maybe he lived in California.
Yeah, he had his course. He was
doesn't matter. Keep going.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you're right. I think the number is like 60% between the federal and state and local. If he happens, I mean, it, Kevin, it's too much. I don't care if I even like the guy. It's too much. Not to mention,
you are seeing companies move out of California now. Tesla is one of the notable leaders. You know, these are people. And what's crazy, though, is you're getting a lot of people who, you know, a lot of wealthy people are leaving California because of the tax situation. And then they're going to states like Texas or Colorado or wherever, and they're now supporting people with the same policies. You know, that's just crazy. But that's, you know, that's 2020 for you.
Hey, do you have a...
Just one more 2020 thing.
All right, real quick question. We got to let you go. Do you have in your school, do you guys have an expert, a tax guy?
I do have a tax guy. I also have someone who I'd like you to... I want to do an email introduction and have you talk to him, but that's a separate issue. We have an accounting guy, and there is a tax course, but... And Rob also teaches for IUSB, so he gets into the upper level courses. But we don't, you know, we're 2-year college, so our accounting program doesn't get too deeply into tax. That's an upper level course.
I'm really dying to find out how this working from home. If your home is in a different state, what state you get taxed in?
Oh, that's a good question, but I suspect that you owe the tax in the state where you earn it. Look, I pay my state income taxes to the state of Michigan, even though I work in Indiana. I live in Michigan.
I know, but if...
So I don't know why it would be any different.
Except
that if I live in Michigan, let me see, how would I do this?
Well, but I'm take this for an
somehow
example.
Somehow or another, I'm sure both states want to get their hand in my pocket. So.
All right, so you worked in New York, and you live in New Jersey. So, okay, so now you're not going into New York. So say you're working for PTI New York, right? And we got some huge place in Manhattan, I can only dream. Why can't we pay you out of PTI Texas now that you're not going in?
Well, if you live in Texas, you ought to be able to.
I'm saying you're in New Jersey.
Does that become the home office for you? Do you get transferred to PTI Texas? Interesting question.
No, I'm not asking you to be paid in the Texas piece. I'm saying I think we can screw New York.
Well, I think that's a holy thing.
Yeah. Anyway, have a good one. S&P futures down 175. NASDAQ futures up 30. We'll come right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 1.25, NASDAQ futures up 35. Can't stop this NASDAQ. We got our monopoly companies and we're pushing them. We're pushing them to the max. The trees are growing to the sky. The Amazon tree, the Google tree, the Microsoft tree. And there you got a guy like Russell out there watering them.
I am. Because I want to prove my dad wrong.
Yes.
Money does grow on trees.
God. Well, I guess sometimes it does. If people like your apples, that's a good tree to have. But
we were channel surfing Saturday night and came across an old episode of Green Acres, and old Eddie Albert was trying to figure out how to get his apples to market early so he could get the best price.
I'm going to say
this is great economics with Wilbur the pig.
I'm going to say that. If there was a guy that was ever on TV that reminds me of you, it would have been Eddie Albert in that show.
He was dressed just like me.
Yeah.
He had a sweater vest on and a tie, and he was farming.
Well, he was driving the tractor.
That's my farming outfit, too.
He was driving the tractor. Hey, I have a question for you. as things get involved, one of my favorite books is Freedom from Fear, William Kennedy, when he talked about the atomic bomb and whether we're going to drop it or not, his phrase was, "The events were in the saddle and they drove the men hard," which is an interesting phrase. And I'm looking at the coronavirus now, and again, this is not me being a doctor or whatever, but just the things that passed my desk here mostly from listeners, and thank you very much. Study small around the world, and something people have agendas and that, but basically I read all of it, or most of it, and you get somewhat of a feeling on what's going down. And the early stage was, in May, the Italian doctor had said, it seems to me that this mutation has made the disease more contagious and less deadly, which is what you would normally expect in a virus, because if you kill the host, you don't get anywhere, right? As a virus.
Yeah, you want to stick around.
Yeah. So, he mentioned that, and it was months later, somebody from Center for Disease Control looks like that's what's happening. Now, last week, somebody was on CNBC and said, look, the lady says, look at all the cases. He goes, nobody's sick. The amount of asymmetric cases is off the chart.
That's something anecdotally that I kind of was thinking about. With respect to the thing, and again, this is just me like noticing the state of the world. And I keep hearing that we've got a record number of cases, but you're not seeing the stories of the hospitals getting
right.
slammed anymore.
No. And we had one of the...
Like, you know, which kind of matches up to what you're saying.
Well, Kevin sent me this thing from... I don't know where he got it, but it was a report from... and Mew is a university dude. The top... Well, not the top 50, but they had 50 universities that have been testing people right and left. In the first couple of months of this year, they've got 69,000 confirmed cases. Zero deaths, three hospitalizations. And
okay.
and now I just got this thing sent from one of the listeners today. This is from the John Hopkins. This is the United Kingdom data. Now, United Kingdom is pitching a bitch about their, you know, their everybody's being locked down again and everything. Now, in March, they had, get a load of this. This is before people, you know, maybe the disease was different. Like the guy from this, yesterday, this doctor, he said, this is not the same disease as it was in March and April. Everybody thinks it is nuts. I mean, it just isn't. I mean, maybe we lucked out. I mean, we didn't know anything. Maybe we lucked out. In March in the United Kingdom, 27,000 cases, 1,500 deaths. I'm rounding these a little bit. April, get a load of this. 136,000 cases, 23,000 deaths. May, 89,000 cases, 12,000 deaths. Now they start to go down. Well, now, of course, it's flaring back up, right? Because I don't know why. But so in September, 103,000 cases. So almost as many as the top months in April. Guess how many deaths?
About 1,500.
30.
Only 30?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm cheating a little bit. I'm on the John Hopkins site, and over the past month, there have been 260. This is last 30 days. Over a quarter million new cases and 1,400 deaths, and they show that the record high number of cases occurred in October, but the record high number of deaths is the month you just said, April, and I hadn't even noticed all of that, but. It just seemed anecdotally that that the world is in the same place as the numbers you just threw out there, what I seem to be seeing is being backed up by the numbers that you just threw out there, that we don't see the stories of, you know, the folks that work at hospitals that have been there for, you know, 4 days straight trying to treat everybody. And, you know, maybe it's mutated into a bad version of the flu.
Well, and you
know? I hate that flu comparison. I really do. Because the second you say that, everybody, you know, you start having people point their finger at you and say, well, you know, people say that the flu kills a certain number of people every year, but it's just not the same thing. And it is a big, there is a difference,
well,
but now
well,
maybe it is
well, funny
mutating
you should...
into something that's not fun to get, but not nearly as deadly as it was.
Well, funny you should mention that, because also in this article that was sent to me, in 2018, they had a pretty bad flu in the United Kingdom, and they were getting 2,200 deaths a month while the flu was raging.
Which is about where we're at now for COVID.
Well, in July, they had 879 deaths, August, 342, September, 30. Get a load of this. August, it 31,000 cases, 342 deaths. Now, there's a lag on these death things, probably. September, 103,000 cases, 30 deaths. So anybody doesn't think that something's changed here really is in denial. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea, you know, did the big guy upstairs, if there is a big guy upstairs, say, I've done enough to these people, I'm going to mutate this thing into something that isn't as been. My question to you, Russell, who knows what causes something like that?
No, I'm thinking about like when Notre Dame is beating somebody by 50 points at halftime and they run the ball out of bounds on the two and turn the ball over so that they don't run the score up anymore. God is taking that attitude toward us.
Yeah, these guys have had enough this year.
Come on.
Yeah, they've had it up. But now my question is, If this is true, and I don't know if it is or not, but if it's true, given what's going down, given the amount of money, given the politics on one side or the other, if this number in October is zero deaths, can we turn the bus around in terms of distancing and paying people for are we still going to make people take vaccines? Are we still going to pay billions of dollars a week to drug companies? Can we, if the numbers are going this way, can we change our tune without?
Can we go back to school?
But all that stuff. Or is it so fixated now that if there's zero deaths in November, we're still doing the same stuff?
I think that we should be able to go back to behaving the way that you behave during a normal flu season. That's how it would seem.
What are the chances of that? I'm going to say zero.
You never know. After the election, I'm just going to start talking like this. After the election, when Biden wins, is Trump just going to change his tune on everything, or state governors going to say, okay, we've gotten past the election and, we've got a new guy coming in and this thing's not politicized anymore. I think let's open things up. And I know there are states where things are very open.
Yeah, Florida went to Carlos on there yesterday.
I think South Florida is like a big experiment right now. Things work out.
But how do yesterday, I don't know if you were listening to your, well, I guess she's my mayor, not yours, Lori.
Yeah, she's not my mayor.
If you go to Indiana for, I don't know how many hours it was, maybe how many hours you got to go, if you're over there, how many hours, and you come back, you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days, and they said, but unless you're in a, what's the word? Not emergency personnel. Not necessary. What's the word they use, Manny? Essential business.
Essential worker. Yep.
Now, and the thing about this, and I know I'm sort of making light of this, but I'm not really, sort of tongue in cheek. Unless you're somebody who delivers a sandwich to Lori, or does her haircut, or I'm not just picking on her personally, like I am, but unless you're essentially a servant for the upper class that can stay home and get paid by people. If you're a servant, you got to go back to work. If not, you're supposed to. If you're anybody that might meet them, you're supposed to stay home for 14 days. But if you're a garbage guy, a police guy, an Amazon delivery guy, a sandwich maker, then you got to go back to work, even if you might have it. I look at that Russell, and I go, "What? This is not the America I know, or maybe it is now."
No. You sound like a complete jerk when you start to talk about individual rights in a situation where your misbehavior can put other people at risk. But that's the kind of stuff that happens in communist countries where they dictate who can behave in certain ways. Not necessarily. I mean, in this case, we're saying based on what they do job wise, but just based on if you're a party member or not. 50 years ago, party members would have been able to leave the house in Russia with a mask on, but nobody else would have been able to. And that's that, and they would have checked you that way. It takes us down a really slippery slope. And again, you sound kind of heartless when you start looking at it from that perspective. But, if the numbers are going in the direction that you just said, where it's really not worse than a bad flu, you should be able to go out. We should be switching over to the personal responsibility model.
Well, are we ever going to get over this? If you were to say to me, put me in a room, a dark room, put a shine of light on me, Chief, who are essential personnel? I'm going to say, well, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. I'm going to say the police, hospital. What about the guy who delivers
my Jimmy John's guy?
Yeah, what about the guy who delivers my sandwich? I better go. I don't know about that. Well,
that's food.
Yeah, one day a week I've got to go to Costco in Oak Brook. All those guys got to be there, don't they? No.
Yes, they do.
I mean, well, if I go there and there's no food, what about me? I got my mask on. I'm about one day a week. I got to have all this stuff right in front of me. By the way, if I pull up, some guy better run out with my stuff in the car so I don't get infected. What about that guy? Well, we don't care about him. Okay. Anyway.
No, I do think that we're reaching a point. And the other funny thing I've noticed, I've really not paid as much attention to the numbers I used to be fixated on them. And my next door neighbor still is. I should go over and ask her how DuPage County's doing. But if we really are reaching a point where it truly is not as bad as it was last spring. You know, we probably should start to loosen some things up and try to go back to some sort of normalcy.
We
should. And I think we're all kind of worn out and ready for normalcy. Never in a million years would I have. I would have placed a lot of money on you know, betting that we would be back to normalcy by now, back in like April. I was trying to be as positive as possible about this thing, but I really felt like by the end of the year, I probably said this a couple of times on this show, that we're going to have the best Christmas ever because we'll be back to normalcy and there'll be all this pent up, demand to buy crap. And now I'm not 100% sure I see that.
Well, the mental health stuff is the thing that's got me worried. I mean,
if you see some of the rage videos of people that go out in public and they shame people that aren't wearing their masks and stuff like that, people don't behave like that in normal circumstances.
No.
Not to the extreme that they have been.
If you want to protect yourself, wear a mask, stay inside, you know.
Yeah. Well, and don't watch the news because it'll make you crazy.
Well, I felt, once in a while when you get...
I think that's part of it. I think that we're trapped and we're watching more news, which is 99% bad and frustrate 99% of people when they watch it. I think that's part of the problem.
Well, we watch news shows.
One of the few, we don't have sports as an outlet anymore, so now you're rooting for your political party.
Well, you're watching the news that isn't the news.
Yeah, that and it's all so bad. But I've really. Back when 9/11 happened, South Park did a really good episode on it, just where they made fun of Bin Laden and did a few other things. But they had one of the parents curled up on the fetal position watching the news 24/7.
Yeah.
And
well, last night,
making it worse.
Last night, a couple of my thief friends from the industry, we met downstairs for an adult beverage, one of the only place open is down the loop, damn near. The guy goes, how come you're kind of depressed? And I said, well, one of the guys who's been on the show, a few times, his mom, nursing home, and they basically told him that, she got a few days to go. And all I kept thinking about was, not that, when you get that age, things are inevitable, I was just trying to chronicle what the last year of her life has been like.
Oh, isn't that terrible?
They wouldn't let her out of her room. They wouldn't let the family come see her. I don't think she could play bridge with the rest of the girls in the place. I don't know how much.
Oh,
of
yeah,
that's necessary.
Like being in solitary.
Yeah. These are people that grew up. And I was talking to Brendan yesterday about when we were kids, and you wanted to play basketball, you wanted to do anything. You had to call somebody's house. The mom picked up the phone in the kitchen. So you knew everybody's mom, and they knew your voice. You knew everybody. There's no such thing as sneaking an email into the guy's room behind a closed door, and he walked out to play basketball and didn't even tell his mom where he was going. She knew where he was going. She set it up for him. Hey, you got to go. The basketball starts at 4. Get your butt over there. I'm not saying it was Nirvana. It wasn't, but there was a certain something to it. The thought of putting those ladies or guys that were so used to having people around them all the time in a nursing home for a year and saying nobody can see you, nobody, you can't even talk to the person next door. That is so unconscionable to me. I feel so powerless. I can't do anything about it, but that's insane, Russell. It's insane.
Oh yeah. Now my father passed away last summer. And I was speaking with one of his friends recently, and she said, and her husband had passed away around the same time, and she said, aren't you kind of glad that they're not around and having to live through all this crap? And I was like, yeah, I kind of am, because I would rather, when he knew he was on the going the downslope, I flew him up here, he hung out with his grandkids for a little while, did a bunch of other things. A year later, he would have been on the downslope and stuck at home by himself.
Yeah, you can't.
It would have been awful.
All right,
I know exactly what you're saying.
All right, so Russell, on the economic front, How let's assume for a second that I am somewhat right, and that part of the reason, or maybe I think a lot of the reason, that the market is running up is because of the amount of money being poured in. Well, we saw what happened in the last quarter of 2018 when the Fed stopped pouring money in and actually tried to draw a little bit out.
Yeah.
How the hell
but
are these
they
guys...
They don't like that.
Now, how the hell are these guys... Now, whatever, say Biden gets in, crazy Pelosi's talking about, you know, over $2 trillion in a stimulus package. And I don't see why it has to be that big. But anyway, that's what she wants to do. So now we're talking about a Fed balance sheet of pushing 10. Because what are we now, 7.2? So add another 2-something to it. Because the Treasury's not going to be able to borrow any of this money. Well, they'll borrow it for an hour before the Fed goes out and buys it, right? They'll do the two steps. So Goldman Sachs just came out and said, by the way, they made $9 a share instead of $5. So the stock is up, $4.69. How much money do you think that those bleeps made on federal government transactions?
Oh gosh. I'm gonna send students off to try to break that one down.
Yeah, I got to believe that they're right in the middle of this.
It's funny. Teaching ethics last night, I was doing a. We had a question where somebody wanted to. A manager is transferring some securities to one client to another, and does it through a broker, and basically, you know, the customers end up paying an awful lot. They sell it a low bid, they buy it a high offer, and they pay a commission.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you just said is a roundabout way of the federal government handing money over to the big banks without it being a loan or something that's so transparent we see it. But there's a darn good chance they've been doing that.
Well, they remember... I'm going back a ways on this. Remember Bill Seidman, who used to be on CNBC, and he died, man, I'm going to say, four years ago?
Yeah,
well, he was a guy that was involved in the Resolution Trust, which to me, you don't need to read anything worse or anything more now. The president is bad enough, but if ever things get good, you ought to read about something that really sucked. Dig on the internet and read about the Resolution Trust and what a cesspool that was. How we took wealth from one group of people and essentially gave it to another group. And he would be on CNBC and he'd say, well, you know, just to see if it worked, we had to sell stuff at like 40 cents on the buck when we knew it was worth 75 just to see if the system worked. And that's what you got to do. And God, such a cavalier attitude with other people's money. And when the guys who are getting the money are like, sitting there going, I can't believe these guys just sold me this at this price. Is there ever an excuse for what he, and I liked the guy, and he was pretty, you know, I liked the guy, but is there ever an excuse for doing that? Just puking away somebody else's firm that somebody or some bank or somebody had for 80 cents on the buck and the government's now gotten receivership and you sell it to somebody you like for 40 cents when you know it's worth 72.
I mean, no, there really isn't. And, they're able to get away with that because everybody says, well, it's the government's money. It's not the government's money. It's the client's money.
Right.
You know, it's the public's money.
Or it might even be the client's money.
The client.
Money. If you sold it at 72, the guy who originally owned it might actually got some money back. Mm-hmm. Right?
I think people forget that the government's money is really our money.
I think
in a roundabout, it is.
The people in power think it's their money.
The government decides to spend. Let's make things very easy. Let's say there were 250 million Americans, because doing math on the radio is impossible. And there's some new $10 billion program. Well, that's $40 for each of us.
Right. Well, yeah. They absolutely don't think that way. We absolutely don't think that way.
That's how we should be thinking.
Yeah, but. From your lips to God's ear, but I mean, that ain't happening. I'm saying, how does if the Fed ever wants to, how do you turn this bus around? I mean, with the mortgage stuff, the interesting part. I mean, I'll do this real quick, hopefully before the break. When you go and buy, kick me if I'm wrong here, Russell. Normally, the Fed's job or the way they do things. I'm not saying it's their job. When they put money in the system or they pull money out, they'll do U.S. Treasuries, 90 days, or they'll do 6 months, they'll do a year. I don't think they normally go out further than that unless they make a big deal out of it. But say they do 6 months. Well, they know right where they are with the 6 months. All right, so they can control, we're going to go buy some of these things in or put money in the system. But then in 6 months, you know, the Treasury and us make we meet in the street and we change the cash for the stuff, right? So essentially ends in 6 months. But when they went out and bought all the mortgages, and I remember basically bitching at the time that this is a really horrible idea, because if you go out and buy mortgages, you have no control over the how quickly they come out of the system, right?
Right.
But if you pour, say, $1 billion into the system and you buy mortgages, well, now you've put $1 billion cash in the system, which with any kind of multiplier is probably worth, what, $5-6 billion? You know more about that than me, what the current multipliers are. So now it's in the system. But all you've done is you've taken, you know, you've pushed current stuff in there, because now every time somebody writes a check, instead of it going to the bank to be used for another mortgage loan, it's going to the Fed to essentially be retired and go into a black hole, right? Or if somebody buys another house and takes that mortgage and pays it off early, you're going to get that, and it's going to come dragging out of the system at a time you can't control, right? So
right.
You've totally left yourself open to the money supply being into the wind, and whenever people either pay their stuff. But what you've really done is you've taken, if a bank owns the mortgage, okay, they're going to get whatever, $500 a month. But if you buy the mortgage from the bank, you're going to give them $100,000 for the mortgage that now goes into the system as a one-time, here's 50 cases of beer, okay, type of thing. Mm-hmm. But then the next however many years, the 500 hours, it should be going to the bank. The six-pack that should show up every week for the football game is now going to the Fed. So all you've done is push one, you've pushed things ahead. So by doing it that way, you almost insured yourself that if you don't keep buying the damn things, you're going to cause a drain. As much as you put the $1 billion in today, you're going to cause a drain of the billion over the next few years at a pace you can't control. So I don't see why anybody would ever do that, Russell, and yet we did.
Well, you got to get the money out there.
Okay, but you can't control. You know, it's like lighting fires when it's a dry season. You can't control what happens. Anyway, S&P futures up 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 27. I think we'll be up today. We can't. There is no force to the downside here that I can see. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, just from Matt Weber. S&P futures down 1.25. NASDAQ futures up 19 as we're trying to bounce back from that nasty down day. I said, what are we doing going down? Dow's up 37. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 10. That's 0.1% or flat. FTSE down 14.2%. CAC around down 7. That's 0.1% or solid flat. Over in Asia, slow as well. Nikkei up 24.1%. Shanghai down 18.6%. I don't want to make any kind of move. Hang Seng up 17. It's 1.1%, which remember yesterday they were absolutely flat. So you ever seen the Hang Seng that quiet for 2 days? By way of review yesterday, we were down, but not near as much down as we were up the day before. Maybe not even a third, but I'm going to say maybe we were up 50-some points in the S&P. They were down 22 yesterday. Dow was down 157. It was up like 4-something. So, I mean, it wasn't even a close to a Fibonacci reversal. NASDAQ was only down 12 after being up 350 the day before. Bonds, 30-year, 0.71. That's actually down a basis point. The Bund, minus 0.57, so that's down 2 basis points. They're going further negative. And Japan is same as it was, positive 0.03%. Oil was rallying a little bit earlier, but not now. 40.16 down 4 cents. Brent up 2 cents. So let's just say the whole oil patch is pretty much flat. Gold, however, kicking up a little bit. 1380, 1908. Still showing no real signs of going back to that 2000 number, or was briefly a few months ago. Silver up 39 cents. Big move in silver. 24.52. Copper up a penny to 306. Matty, what do you got for us? Travy Weathersports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The big issue right now is on the northbound tri-state. If you're headed towards O'Hare or anywhere in that area, it's packed from the Cermak Toll to the Bensonville Bridge because of a crash blocking a couple of lanes on the northbound at Tri-State. So that is a completely jammed up situation heading northbound. Southbound, no problem, but northbound Tri-State is a major issue right now. One other crash in the area is on I-355, the Veterans Memorial northbound, just before West St. Charles Road. There's some delays from an earlier crash there. No issues coming inbound on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower is looking good for the most part as well, especially as you get further in toward downtown. Stevenson is looking good. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Weather today, clouds early before we warm up and get some sunshine this afternoon. A beautiful day today. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 75. Right now it's overcast and 52 degrees downtown. Enjoy today if you can, because it's going to get cold starting tomorrow with highs in the 50s for the foreseeable future. So enjoy that high of 75 today. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 101 today. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, a rare Tuesday night football game last night. There will be no Thursday night football this week, but it was two undefeated teams, Tennessee hosting Buffalo, and the Titans took care of the Bills without issue. 42-16 was the final last night. Chief.
Who was supposed to be Thursday?
The Patriots, I believe.
against somebody, and they moved that to Monday.
Next Monday?
With Denver?
Correct. Yeah, I think Patriots and Broncos. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And so there'll be a Monday Night Football doubleheader this coming Monday.
As we couldn't wait to fire Ricky Renteria, how much you want to bet that the Sox hire Joey Cora the day he comes off suspension?
Alex Cora.
Alex Cora, whatever.
Well, they're two different guys.
Yeah.
So, like, they're both baseball guys. And they're both two different guys.
That's the difference.
So it doesn't matter. But, and one cheated as the manager of the Red Sox, and Joey Cora did not, as far as we know.
Okay.
Anyway, he's a leading candidate, and I know Josh Nelson has tweeted about that, and we'll see if we can get Josh on this week to give us more detail on that. But that would be awful if you hired him, in my opinion.
What do you mean?
I couldn't manage that team when you tell him what pitch is coming.
Well, he proved that if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Right.
Chevy Truck Month.
I would just want to mention that the managers, I mean, these guys are being, they're all going to seem like buffoons, but have we ever had a situation where you had to play every day? I mean, I don't know how many listeners have recognized this. They're making these guys pay every single day in a row. Like the three-game series was three in a row. The five-game series was 5 days in a row, and now the 2-7 games. I don't know about the World Series, but this one is every day for 7 days. I don't know that any guy is going to look good with his pitching staff when you're doing that.
Not at the playoff level. That's pretty crazy.
No. I mean,
yeah, but they don't have to travel, which might help a little bit, you know.
It does help. I mean, I was just going to say, in baseball, during the regular season, seven in a row is probably not that big of a deal. It happens multiple times throughout the season. But when it's playoff pressure and you're using, you know, you're pulling pitchers after an inning or two innings, as we see in the postseason, because there's much less room for error, I just worry about the arms. I mean, you're going to run out of arms.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The days of the Oral Hershisers and Bob Gibsons where you've got three starts in a World Series, well, you had 2 days off in there. Two travel days, right?
Yeah, minimum.
So, I mean, you could pull that off. You can't. How are you going to pull it off now? Not even close.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be two starts tops. Look for managers, if they get a starter that has it going, to leave them in longer than they normally would.
I think that there's a little bit, there's something a little bit different with respect to the number of players. I think they actually can,
it's three
they've
more.
Got a secondary squad that they can draw upon.
Well, they got three. The roster is 28, right, Manny?
The roster is went from 25 to 28. The postseason, I'd have to look at the postseason rules, because I think what Russell is saying is they can maybe draw upon their taxi squad a little bit too. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I'd have to look.
Are the announcers idiots?
I'm googling around and reading and talking at the same time, which means I'm getting it wrong.
Are the announcers idiots or am I?
I'm trying to figure it out.
So. Dusty made a change last night, and he brought some guy in, and then the first guy up, of course, gets a duck snort with the bags loaded. I mean, Houston has not. I don't think they deserve a break after cheating last year, but could not get a break last night.
No,
they got bags loaded. They bring this guy in, and he hasn't gotten hit in forever. He launches one. It was an absolute duck snort, man. Over the pop fly over the first baseman's head. And of course, he's a righty, so they're playing him with the big shift. You stat guy shift. The guy's in right center, and he runs about seemingly half a mile and still doesn't get near the ball, right? So they go, Dusty's sticking with the pitcher. Don't you have to stick with the guy for three people in the playoffs?
I don't, yeah. I mean, as far as I know, that rule applies to the playoffs, too. I don't know for sure. I know the guy starting at second base in the extra innings doesn't apply to the playoffs, so maybe the pitcher rule doesn't either. I don't know. I thought it did. That's another thing we'll have to look, because in the regular season, that guy would have had to face a minimum of three guys since he didn't, you know, get the last out of the inning.
All right, so I also have another question, rules question, and you guys are my mavens. I know Matty is. What's the story with the DH? Has that changed?
How so?
Well, for listeners, the DH in softball, okay, and I'm using a softball analogy, if we show up with 11 people, I can bat, me being the manager, which I always was, I can bat 11 people. And if all of a sudden the left fielder, you know, pulls up lame, I can put the DH in left fielder. And the DH is a position like anything else. You can switch back and forth. But in major leagues, you couldn't do that. the DH had to stay the DH, and he couldn't go in the field. Or the only way he'd go into the field is if you lost the DH. Well, last week when the Cubs were playing, Contreras started out as a DH, and he caught the last couple innings. How did that happen?
Did they give up their DH spot?
Is that the rule?
My understanding of that rule is how you explained it. If you do that, then you give up your DH spot, and that becomes the pitcher spot, and so you'd have to pinch hit, you know, or otherwise your pitcher has to bat.
So if the catcher's batting eighth and Contreras is batting ninth and he's a DH, you pull the catcher out, you have to put, the pitcher now has to bat in the eighth slot.
That's my understanding of that rule forever.
Okay.
Now, you can sub your DH from a bench player and not lose a DH, but if you put your DH into a position, then you're giving up your DH spot, and then that becomes the pitcher spot, and then you'd either have to have your pitcher hit or you'd have to pinch hit.
Because a lot of these teams now are using the catcher, they have only two catchers on a roster, are using the off catcher as the DH. Well, you'd never do that if you couldn't switch him if something happened to your catcher. Right?
Yeah, well, I feel like that's the manager mindset on catcher use has changed dramatically in the last 10 years for some reason. Because it used to be you would never use your backup catcher unless you absolutely had to, because you were so worried about your starting catcher getting hurt and then not having a catcher. Now they don't seem to care. Every team will play both catchers, and they're just like, well, we'll deal with it if it happens. And of course, it never happens. But every team kind of has an emergency catcher. I mean, the Cubs would put Schwarber back there. He's caught in the big leagues before.
Well, if you put me back there, it would be pretty bad.
Well, it'd be bad if you put me back there too.
Just saying.
Neither of us happen to be on the 28-man roster, though.
No. Although some of them have gone down low enough, I thought you might get the call. You know, just saying. But I don't know about Russell or me. We might be over the hill. The
problem is I'd even be a slow pinch runner, so I don't think I'd bring any value at all.
So if they put me in as a pinch runner, could I still get a designated runner?
Tom Howe to pinch run needs a courtesy runner.
Needs a courtesy runner. what the hell? So Russell, we're going to get this change in the White House.
We're getting a change in the White House.
All right, so some might say going from Tweedledee to Tweedledum.
I'm not so sold. I hope Russell's right, but
I'm not so sold either. I'm not sold about that at all. Let me ask you this.
Let's just say I felt confident in 2016, and I even said it on the show, and everyone was like, basically laughed at me, and then they were right and I was wrong. So now I'm not confident at all.
Well, as Manny Weber, the same one, the one that we used to remember when he was young and didn't basically do anything right, now he does everything right or close to it. You did all the research on the last election, and you came out with the analysis. See how good he's getting at this, Mr. Professor? That the reason why Hillary voted is, what did you say, 8 million people, Democrats essentially stayed home.
Yeah. I mean, I pulled all the stats, and it's been 4 years, so I don't remember the numbers in detail. But essentially, the Republican turnout had been relatively flat, you know, when you factor in population growth, over a period of the last 4 or 5 presidential elections. The Democratic voting turnout had spiked majorly in the Obama years, especially his first election. It was huge turnout, and that was mostly minority voters and young voters. And then his second term, it was still higher than it had been, not quite as much as in 2008, but 2012 still very high. 2016, the Republicans still got that same number they always get, and the Democratic votes were gone. And they were just gone. Even though they still won the popular vote by 3 million or whatever, it was down huge from 2012, and then even more so from 2008. And if they don't show out here in 2020, the Republicans are going to get their same number. I mean,
here's the big difference. The Democrats are going to stay home because they've already voted.
That is interesting. How many people voted so far? Isn't it like 5 or 6 million?
I've heard 13 million.
Oh, it's that many. Wow.
All right, so... Yeah. All right, so if as we were discussing last night, if it's a matter of fact, there were bets going around the table. I did not participate in the betting, so I ended up being the banker, which I'd almost probably rather been a better than the banker. Let's say, for instance, because I asked the question, let's say it's a Biden, use the term landslide, say he wins by a lot. Now, where do we think that's coming from? Like Maddie says, I don't think you're going to get any less Republican voters. are you going to get half the voters that Obama got and Hillary didn't get? I don't know if Biden's that much of a...
Well, the one interesting thing is, and I would like to hear Russell's thoughts on this, but, you know, Russell, you've said on the show many times that you typically vote Republican, and we have a lot of guys on the show, Fari Hamzy, you know, former contributor, still friend of the show. I know a lot of guys like Kevin and Lou who are not the biggest Trump fans. Guys that typically vote for the conservative candidate may not vote for Trump for this time. And that may be...
I didn't.
Right, and that may be a bigger number than we think, where that Republican number maybe is different. I don't know. We'll see.
But it doesn't have to be a really big number to make it different. I actually just, I forgot to tag you, or forgot to tag the show, but I just tweeted the current Real Clear Politics no toss-up poll. It's got Biden at 358 electoral votes and Trump at 180. The same poll, the same situation, which they've taken down, but I still have a screenshot of it somewhere. The exact same thing the day before the election had Hillary winning by 6 electoral votes. It just took one state. I mean, there was more than one state, but it just took one state. This thing is not nearly as close as it was. I mean, it is as far as national votes go, but, you know, the Democrats are not going to allow, they're not going to lose Wisconsin again. They screwed around and they, you know, and never even visited Wisconsin, and I think the on-the-ground organization in the states that are pivotable, I think that's where I'd love to see afterwards, you know, where were most of the mail-in votes or the absentee ballots coming from. And I think the Democratic Party's probably doing a great job of making sure that people vote and have already voted. I get a freaking pop-up ad every 15 minutes about early voting.
Yeah.
And I'm not even the one they want.
I have a question for you guys.
I can only imagine if you search the type of stuff that makes it look like you're going to vote for Biden, how often you're getting bothered by all this. But it's not I'm saying this right now and I'm going to use a hedge clause, barring some massive event. And I think a lot of people felt that the debates were going to be were the biggest risk, and they may not even debate anymore. I really think, and I read an article this morning where it said Biden's new strategy should be running out the clock. That kind of should be his strategy. Let your ground
he
people
should,
make sure people show
should,
up to vote.
He
and
should not talk. He should
got
not talk at
thing.
All. One of my right wing guys called yesterday. He said something about some place. He said somewhere that if he was a black person, he'd be ashamed to live in this country. Come on, you can't say that. Come on. Joe, wake up. I mean, here's...
Really?
Two things. One is, one of the guys last night says to me, he lives in the South Loop, one of these high-rises. He says, well, are you going to vote? When are you going to vote? And I said, I'm going to vote on election day. And he looks at me like I got four heads. He goes, I already voted. And I go, why'd you vote? Voting is the second Tuesday or the first Tuesday in November. Well, I went Sunday. He said there were 200 people there in a line. And I go, what'd you do that for? And he goes, well, I wanted to vote. I said, well, I walk out my front door, I make a left, take 15 steps, I walk in, there's never anybody there. Why would I come down here on a Sunday and wait in line? And I said, do you even know where your polling place is? Well, no. I said, you're in a high-rise South Loop. I'll bet it's... I'll give you a 50-50 chance it's in your building. He goes, I said, if it isn't, it's in the building across the street. Man, I never thought of that. what are you doing? Anyway, but here's my... I'll do the keys to the election from what I see happening. Again, it's just not just me. It's all the stuff people are sending me and having people on the show. The Republicans that voted for Trump, I'm going to say, everything we've heard on the show, that 7% of the people are even up in the air for changing their vote. So he's going to get most of those people. I think he sheds some of the suburban moms because they can't stand the carnage.
Yeah.
I think he sheds some of those people. I don't know that Joe, and I don't think Kamala is pulling it. I don't think Joe drags. Now, Lori Lightfoot is all over everything about getting out the vote. So some people are pushing the minority vote for this group like they did for Obama. I think they get some of that. I think out of the 8 million, they might get one or two. They're not getting all eight. But here's something I can't quantify it. and but I think it's there. The old Democrats like me. You know, I was never, well, I guess I was a union worker for a while when I was on the truck docks, but, the big forum union guys that used to be the backbone of the Democratic Party absolutely can't stand this iteration of this party. They don't think there's any room for them. They think it's been taken over basically by God knows what. And it has no room for them. I think they lose a lot. Now, I don't think those guys are going to vote for Trump. Maybe they're going to vote for the Libertarian or sit it out. I don't see those guys walking down the block and voting for Biden and for Kamala Harris.
So
I'm saying these are all keys to the game. Now, we still have to play the game, as Howard Cosell would say. But, I mean, Matty, do you disagree with any of those things I just said?
No, I don't disagree. Yeah, I think that's...
And what do you think is it going to be the key factor? I don't know. There's a lot of stuff working here.
I think the key factor is going to be the people that normally don't vote who have been taken by the hand and already voted.
That's interesting. I have no idea how to quantify that, Russell.
You can start... I mean, like I said, we've gotten 13 million absentee ballots. I do think they break absentee ballots out when they tell you the electoral... I can recall we had a close one in Memphis a long time ago, and it was just a couple hundred vote difference, so they had to count the 2,000 absentee ballots, and we knew what that number was. I feel like we'll get a breakout of that after the fact. One of the most interesting things with respect to absentee ballots that I heard the other day, or heard yesterday, was different states have different rules. Some of them don't start counting them until the polls close. That's not true for Ohio or Florida. So when you start, which are very, very key states, they'll know, with the absentee ballots included, they'll know within 24 hours of the polls closing. And those two, you know, if both of those go to Biden, it's game over.
I have a question. I know I'm acting like a total Luddite with this mail-in and absentee stuff. I mean, absentee used to be absentee. People who were in the military overseas, and oh, by the way, if you're on vacation or away on business, you knew about it. And from what I recall, this is 10, 15 years ago, the absentee ballots would go to the precinct, and the people who were the election judges, when the election was over and at 6 o'clock or whatever the hell it is, they pull out the absentees and they go, Matt Weber, flip the page, doesn't look like he already voted. I guess this must be him. His signature matches. Check the signature. And I'm going to say less than 1% of the vote nationwide. To the point where very rarely would you have a state that says, we can't come up with a number till tomorrow because the absentee is so close, we have to dig into the absentee. Because usually it's not within 0.5% or a percent. Half the time I don't think they even had to count them, right? Because it didn't matter. So now all of a sudden in 1 year, now again, this is uneven like you guys have been saying. I mean, Kevin says Oregon has done this mail-in ballot for several elections now, and they seem to be very good at it. I want to know where's the check now? How do we know that the ballot that came in under Matty Weber's name is he didn't vote in the precinct too? I mean, I asked this guy last night. I said, "What'd they check? They check your signature?" He goes, "No." I said, "What'd they check? You're supposed to have your signature and file there." He goes, "They didn't check that. I didn't have to show an ID. I didn't have to do anything." So where, for lack of a better term, where is the check and balance on this? I mean, there must be some, but I don't know what it is.
The one that I did, I actually had to sign it on the back, and I assumed they checked against signature somewhere, and I got a little receipt that I could use to see that my vote had been counted, received. I'm not sure if counted, and my wife checked our ballots the other day, and lo and behold, they have been received. So my Joe Jorgensen vote's going to count.
All right. So if you walk into your precinct a week from Tuesday,
A way for them to check it, and they're not supposed to allow you to vote if your mail-in ballot has been accepted. And you know what? This is the first time I've lived in the house that I live in now on election day. I might actually walk over and see. just for the heck of it. I have a funny feeling that the church across the street is where I vote.
So,
I might actually go check and see. But I also know that there are people who managed to vote twice in other states, and they voted even though they had been told that their absentee ballot had been counted.
All right, so mark down
which is a felony.
Maddie, mark down on your calendar, November 4th. We'll be in the alley at 4 o'clock. That's enough time to get out to wherever county's in, bail his ass out, and then get him on the show. Just saying.
No, I'm just going to want to go see if it's been marked. I'm not going to try to vote twice.
Once you get to the front of the line, you'll be arrested. Mm-hmm. Barney Fife will be all over you. SP Futures now up 7, as if he was up 31. Can't keep a good market down. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.